Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. Trey Wingo is on the line with us. We said we're going to talk to him to kick off this hour, and we're always excited to talk to him. Of course, host on Golic and Wingo, you can hear every morning right here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, and a guy who did another fantastic job on the NFL draft. Trey, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Well, you, in all seriousness, that is a hard thing to navigate over those 3 days, and you've always done a really, really good job with that. How different was it this year trying to navigate, you know, because of the circumstances that we're in?
Yeah, we had a tremendous team. I mean, our director, Jeff Nelson, our producers, Brian Ryan, writer, Rob Adamski, our coordinating producer, Seth Markman. I mean, it was an unbelievable effort. And, you know, 53 days before the draft, we had nothing set up except what we were going to do in Vegas. And in a span of 53 days, with obviously collaboration with the NFL Network and NFL, we were able to pull this thing off. And it was just a Herculean effort by so many people. And I was happy to be a part of it. But, you know, from my perspective, the only difference for me was I was just alone in the studio.
Right.
Normally we're on the set together like we were in Nash Vegas last year, and, you know, having a blast and kibitzing back and forth. So that part of it was different. But for the most part, you know, it was just like a regular draft. I just had to talk to people in boxes instead of people in the studio next to me or on the set next to me. And I'm hopeful, obviously, the next year we'll be doing it the more conventional way. But I have to say, I thought it went off as well as it possibly could have from a technical standpoint.
I could not agree with you more. Hat tip to you guys. You guys not only pulled it off, you pulled it off with flying colors, and it was fantastic. I mean, right? We all went in, and I can only imagine. We just go in as viewers, and we talk to John Robinson and, you know, Titans players about what this is going to be like and people who cover it, but until you go through it. But you're in a different – you're going to have to go through it literally in the middle of it, in the eye of the storm, so to speak. And, man, you guys, it was flawless. And to see, like, you know, the families and the cribs, I mean, Kingsbury's living it up pretty good. It was just cool just to see some of the – I think it humanized some of these guys, right?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, I mean, I was talking to Roger Goodell Saturday during the rounds 4 through 7, and I think, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? That's the old line. And I think that there are some things that we're going to try and incorporate next year into the draft in Cleveland that came out of this. You know, it was a more intimate experience, for lack of a better term. And I think that if we can get some of that intimacy with those war room setups, and, you know, players and coaches are going to fight against that next year. They only did it because they had to this year. If we can get some of that along with the normal insanity that we get from, you know, 650,000 people like we had in Nashville last year, then we'll take it. Although I got to say, Cliff Kingsbury's crib may have won the weekend. Vrabel's crew may have won the weekend as well. What the hell was going on there? We had Frozone. We had, I think, one of Vrabel's kids in a jersey, and the mysterious person in the back left corner, for lack of a better term.
Trey, yeah. He addressed that. He did a Zoom call with the media afterwards.
That provided us lots of material on Friday's show, so we were very thankful
content,
for
baby.
That. Yes, because we had
exactly.
to break down everything. Was he in the bathroom? Was he not in the bathroom? Of course, all of that was addressed and squashed, but it was fun.
Right.
We certainly had fun with it on Friday, and we had the mullet and the old throwback jersey and Vrabel taking out a big chaw out of his mouth. I mean, it was a lot to digest. It really was. But, man, like I said, it gave us great content on Friday.
Well, you know, we all make fun of Cliff because he obviously – Cliff Kingsbury, the Cardinals head coach, because he clearly wanted that shot in particular of his house. I mean, this was a recruiting tool. He was the show pony, no question about it. I think Vrabel took the show pony theme in a different direction, and it also worked for him.
I did see your interview with the commissioner on Saturday. I would have preferred he be in a bathrobe, open a little bit, like a little chest hair, and maybe with a pipe during that interview with you.
I asked if he had a smoking jacket, if he could put that on. He's like, I got to do chores around the house. How about Henry Ruggs, by the way?
Yes.
Kudos to him, knowing who he is and where he's going, experiencing his draft going to Vegas in a robe. I'm just out here in a robe, baby. I'm so fast, I don't even need to get dressed.
That was good stuff. Trey Wingo on the line with us. So we've kind of got a mixed bag here. Since the draft, really leading up to the draft, all the talk about Jadeveon Clowney and where's he going to go, and the Titans are in the mix, and it's kind of a mixed bag on how people feel. It's like 50-50. People really want him, or people say, nah, you know, takes too many plays off, always hurt, you know, all that. Where do you stand on Clowney?
The price will dictate whether or not it's a good signing or not, and it's not a surprise to me that both Jadeveon Clowney and Cam Newton are still out there, because there are two players that, when they're healthy, can be really, really dominant players. But we're in a situation now where we had an off season where you couldn't get your medical people's hands on players. And there are question marks for both of these guys. So I think that's why both of them are still out there. If they had been able to sort of had gone through the regular off season once over, I think they'd both be signed by now. But that obviously has not been able to be the case. Look, if you can get Clowney at the right price, he's totally worth it. And I know that people always focus in on sacks. Focus in on pressures, because a sack gets a quarterback to the ground, no question. But a pressure can be just as disruptive. And his pressure rate, and we have this, you know, we have a million different advanced metrics that we look at now called the pass rush win rate. Clowney's was pretty good last season. And you're right. You wonder sometimes why we don't see every game or on a more consistent basis, because no one's going to do it on a regular basis, every day or every game. But the game he had Monday night against the 49ers, where he was a human wrecking ball in that contest, I mean, he had 9 pressures in that game alone. You still look for that kind of spark on a more regular basis. But for the right price, everyone should be wanting Jadeveon Clowney on their roster.
We're talking to Trey Wingo from ESPN. And Trey, on a sidebar, you can imagine the conversations we've had about this. And one of the things we hit on was there was a time in NFL history that you were evaluating defensive players without the benefit of even having the sack number. So we've debated on how important or is the sack almost a little bit overrated. And that's a little bit where you're going. But think about you know, trying to evaluate free agents in the 70s where you didn't have the sack total. We were talking about Mean Joe Green, who doesn't have officially a sack in his entire career.
Right. You're right. And I mean, I don't want to say the sack is – I think it's over-glorified. I don't think it's a useless stat in any way, shape, or form. But, like, if you're an offensive lineman, you could block the guy for 95% of the game and you give up one sack. He's had a hell of a game and you didn't. I mean, that's not a – smart way to interpret data, if we're being honest about it. Now, you can look at a guy like Frank Clark, who I believe in all 3 playoff games the Chiefs played had the deciding, although it wasn't really the deciding sack against Houston because they had blown him out at that point. But, you know, in the AFC Championship game, Frank Clark got Tannehill on the ground, and Frank Clark got Jimmy Garoppolo on the ground. They gave the ball back to the Chiefs with a 4-point lead with about 2 minutes to play in that game. So, yeah, sacks are important. But I don't think they're the indicator of whether you have a good player who's played a full game. Can they come at peak times when it matters? Absolutely. There's no question about that. But if you're looking at how a defensive rusher or a offensive lineman plays, you can't just point to, well, he gave up a sack or this sack. I mean, like, guy's given up a bunch of sacks in the season. Yeah, there's a problem. But I think it has to be interpreted through the right lens, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Trey is a guy that does TV broadcast for the Nashville Predators. Me as the play-by-play guy and my color guy, sometimes after a road game, we'll get on the plane and we're thinking, hey, really good broadcast. Man, that was awesome. The team won. And our guys behind the scenes, our producer, our director, will say, man, we were dealing with all kinds of stuff behind the scenes. You guys have no idea. I can only imagine what it was like for you, Trey, with so many moving parts during the draft. Is the stuff that we probably never saw when we were watching what was going on behind the scenes. What was that like? How chaotic was it behind the scenes?
Well, it was really interesting, right? Because obviously Connecticut is still very much closed for business. So on a normal day, ESPN's campus in Bristol will have anywhere from 1,800 to 2,000 people on campus. And right now we're at less, they're trying to keep it at less than 200 a day. So you had to have what's called a safe transit letter even to get onto the campus to go do anything. And, you know, it's a letter that says he's an essential employee and he needs to be in here. So in the studio with me, there was me, we had two camera operators and a floor manager, and that was it. The entire research department, normally I have a researcher there handing cards and all this kind of stuff, they were all working remotely. Obviously, everyone else was working remotely. I had a friend of mine say it was the quietest control room he's ever been in. And we should point out that people need to understand this, the way it worked at ESPN, you're not allowed on the campus if you don't have a face covering. So not only were there very few people in there, but everybody that worked that for that broadcast, the entire time they were working, was wearing a face mask and a face covering. And I think that's one of the things that really goes unnoticed, because it can get a little crazy in there. There's a million different things, and you're trying to have communication between everybody in the control room and everybody on the set. And that the guys were able to do that over that three-day time frame while wearing the face coverings was really, really incredible.
Talking to Trey Wingo of ESPN, of course, co-host of Golic and Wingo, that you can hear in Nashville on ESPN 94.9. So, Trey, looking at some quarterbacks that one just signed and one is still available, let's start with Andy Dalton. What did you make of his move to the Cowboys?
You know, look, obviously there's a lot of people going, oh, this means this because Dak hasn't been signed. And I will say this first and foremost. The Cowboys have reverse-engineered this thing to perfection. I mean, like, literally, they have now taken care of a running back, a right tackle, an inside linebacker. They signed a pass rusher off the street who hasn't played in 2015, and now they signed a backup quarterback before they've gotten their quarterback taken care of. Oh, and they also paid $100 million to Amari Cooper, okay, the wide receiver. That is not how you do this. I mean, you take care of your franchise quarterback first, and then you deal with all this other stuff. So if I'm Dak's camp, I'm like, okay, what does it take? And if you look at the numbers that Tony Romo put up, I believe it was after the 2012 season, where he set the Cowboys record for 4,903 passing yards and all his numbers. They are strikingly similar to the season that Dak Prescott just put up there, where he had 4,902 yards and completed 64% of his throws. And I mean, the numbers are almost identical. And Tony was taken care of, and we're still waiting on Dak, and he's the first franchise tagged quarterback in Cowboys franchise history. So there's obviously some stuff going on there. But if you look at the deal for Dalton, it's a one-year deal that could be worth up to $7 million with incentives, but it's really more like a one-year, $3 million deal. Now, he's from there. He wasn't going to be playing in Cincinnati anymore when they took Joe Burrow number one overall. And I believe that had we not been in the situation we're in with the pandemic, I don't think Andy Dalton would have signed this deal. I think he would have found a much better deal and gone somewhere else. But he lives in Dallas. He's from there. So in his mind, he's thinking, okay, I can ride this thing out for a year and we'll figure it out as a backup. I don't think the plan is to have him be the starter over Dak Prescott. I think the plan is we might have the best backup in football right now, because what we're seeing outside of Dak Prescott or Eli Manning, or for most of his career, Peyton Manning, and for most of his career, Tom Brady, quarterbacks go down. I mean, they do. And the Cowboys over the last few years, I think, were 1-6 or 1-7 with their backup quarterbacks, some collection of Brandon Whedon and Matt Castle and others. They just significantly upgraded their backup quarterback position. I mean, I think you can make a really compelling argument that the backup QB is probably a top 25, top 30 position on your football team. And Cooper Rush had all of one pass attempt in the NFL. He was their backup quarterback. It certainly gives them a flex if for whatever reason they can't come to a contract. But I think they still want to get that done. I mean, they're offering Dak a deal that would make him the highest paid player in football based on how you want to look at the language. And this was a one-year deal. If they were really serious about not having him be the franchise quarterback going forward, I think Andy Dalton would have gotten a much better, bigger deal. So it's just a weird juxtaposition, and it's a weird juxtaposition that the Cowboys have allowed to happen with the way they've done this. But I do think it's just – I think it's just improving the backup position right now.
Do you think looking at the Cowboys – I mean, we know how long it's been. I watched the NFC Championship game yesterday where they, you know, go to win their last Super Bowl. It's been that long.
38-27 over the Green Bay Packers. Yeah,
yeah, and so they just haven't – they haven't gotten there. I mean, Tony Romo had some good years but not good enough. And I look at their draft, I look at free agency, and I'm not saying all this because of Andy Dalton, but I feel like the Cowboys are in a position where they should win. They should win that division because it's not very good. They should compete for Super Bowls, but do we really believe that they're going to?
Well, you know, it's interesting, right? The talent is there, and the talent was there last year, and it just didn't come together at the right times. They did. I think they beat one team with a winning record last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was the Philadelphia Eagles, and they didn't have a winning record when they played them, but they ended up with a winning record. You know, they started 3-0 on the season, all against teams that weren't very good, and they finished, 5-8 the rest of the year. So it was a massively disappointing season, but the margin of error usually in the NFL is so razor thin. You know, I mean, I think I always look at one possession games as a real indicator of whether your team is good or not. And I think the Cowboys did not have a really good stellar record along those lines. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't look at how the results dictated the talent last year. I think the talent is there. They just didn't get it over the finish line. And I had a lot of issues with coaching and some of the play calling. Kellen Moore, who was really in his first year as a full-time offensive coordinator, you know, there were times where things got messy and got ridiculous in terms of play selection. And they'd go away from the running game, even though they paid Ezekiel Elliott all that money in the offseason. When he held out, by the way, you know, and has had some suspension issues in his past, I just think there wasn't a cohesive plan at times, and I think that showed from a guy who was a rookie play caller more than anything else. So I do believe the talent is there. Now it's up to Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy has a very stated goal from the owner, Jerry Jones. He wanted a head coach that had a winning record in the NFL and knew what it take to win a Super Bowl, and Mike McCarthy did that with Aaron Rodgers. So the bar is set pretty high for Mike McCarthy. He's not going to be hanging around for a bunch of years at 8-8, 7-9 like Jason Garrett was. I can promise you that.
No doubt about it. Let's finish with this real quick, Trey. I gave my Don Shula story, my personal story at the beginning of the show. Do you have a Don Shula story?
Yeah, you know, the last time I saw him, we did an event together at Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans, and, you know, he was still as sharp as a tack and really hilarious. And, you know, he was in a mobilized scooter at that time and was having some trouble mobility-wise getting around. But, you know, we did an event before the Super Bowl talking X's and O's, and he was just as sharp as he could always be. And it was just so – I mean, they called him Mount Shula in Miami just because he was just a rock. And, you know, a large part of our show that happened right after we went off the air today is going to be dedicated to Don and the things that he's done. I mean, you know, it shouldn't surprise any of us that someone passes away at 90, I guess. But I guess the last couple of times I had seen him or interacted with him, he looked so alive, even though he was still, you know, having some issues getting around. It was just sort of hard to take.
Yeah. Good story. Hey, thanks for sharing. Thanks for doing this as always. Good to hear from you. You have a great week. We'll do it again soon.
You got it, guys. Whenever. Talk to you soon.
All right. Trey Wingo, Golic and Wingo, right here on 102.5 The Game and 94.9. Appreciate him joining us, of course, host NFL Live and hosted the draft. Did fantastic work. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. During this time, Crown Royal and us here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, we'd like to raise a toast to our heroes who are serving on the front lines to protect our communities. Thank you for your sacrifice, the definition of true royalty. For those at home, stay home. For these heroes, because nothing says generosity like staying home to protect others when you can. Join us at 4 p.m. each weekday as we raise a toast to our heroes. Connect with us on social media or text us at 615-737-1025 and tell us about your hero. Cheers, Crown Royal. Must be 21 years of age or older to toast. Please drink responsibly. Good little promotion there. Every day at 4 o'clock, we're going to raise a toast to our heroes, and we'll do that connect on social media. Tell us who's one of your heroes. Okay. You guys heard the conversation. I brought it up to Daron, and we brought it up with Trey Wingo. I'm a little bit surprised at two starting quarterbacks like Jameis Winston and Andy Dalton with their resumes. It's one thing to go and be backups. That's already a little bit surprising to begin with. But why would they not end up in places where you feel like they're like one bad game away, not even the injury part, but one bad game away or a couple bad games or so-so games away, like Jacksonville, or, you know, who knows what the health status of Big Ben and Pittsburgh or New England. We don't know. We don't have a clue whether Jarrett Stidham can handle this role or not. What's the gap between Tom Brady and Stidham? That one of these guys wouldn't have landed in New England or Pittsburgh or Jacksonville. You know, pick a city that makes – a market that makes sense where you just know – let's just say the quarterback isn't on really solid ground. But to go to New Orleans and Dallas, where you're only an injury away from stepping on the field, that's the only way you're going to touch the field, I'm just surprised. And by really how little – I mean, Jameis Winston, are you kidding me? $1.1 million? And then what did Dalton sign for?
I think I got this right.
$3 million
guaranteed.
Four with incentives. Four more million with incentives.
No, I think it get up quite a bit higher than that.
I thought it was seven. $7 million.
Seven. Yeah.
Yeah. Four more. That's what I'm saying. $4 million in incentives.
It's really bizarre, isn't it? To see how this is going down, because it does appear, and this was a big debate on Get Up this morning. I happened to catch, and Chase, you being a Cowboys fan can see this. Dak Prescott has not signed the franchise tag yet, right? So he's leveraging and trying to get the best deal he can. They would like to work a long-term deal out with Dak. And as Daron points out, I mean, Dak is the starter. That's the guy they're going to start. So Andy Dalton goes in knowing he's a backup. He's also part of the power play because now it's a security blanket if a worst-case scenario happens with Dak and he never signs it and he holds out. Right, so that's something Dak Prescott is going to have to factor in here.
Oh, I think it's totally a power play. I think Jerry's saying, okay, I mean, we'd like to get this done. You're the quarterback of the future, but if you're going to drag this out, then I need an insurance policy. And I think Andy Dalton is a fine insurance policy. He's going to be a fantastic backup, and if they have to at least start training camp with him, or, you know, heaven forbid the season, then they have something in place. But I think this is a move. If Dak is signed, if this is all done, I don't know if the Cowboys sign Andy Dalton. I just
Why?
I think this because
what,
I
you what does Andy Dalton signing do for Dak Prescott? What does
insurance,
that do?
It's an insurance policy. If he doesn't sign the franchise tag and if they don't get a deal done. That's
so
how I look at it.
So did he think by not signing it that if they were just going to go without a quarterback? I mean, they were going to sign a quarterback, so is that going to make him run to sign it?
Well, before, their backup was a guy that I've never heard
Cooper
of
Rush,
in my life.
Who they were releasing.
Yeah.
Right, so now they have a guy who has a lot of skins on the wall in his NFL career, so I think that's a little different scenario if Dak Prescott wants to hold out and hold Dallas's feet to the fire. You know, Ezekiel Elliott sort of did the same thing. And, you know, the guy that was backing him up was a reasonable replacement, but he certainly wasn't Elliott. And eventually, Elliott got some pretty good money there. So I'm curious to see how this goes out, because this was something that was kicked around a lot, sort of a leverage play by Jerry Jones. Now, where it could hurt Jones is, let's say that Prescott signs a deal. It's going to be pretty expensive. Maybe he saves a few bucks because of the presence of Dalton. But then if Prescott somehow is hurt and Dalton plays a lot and he starts hitting a few of those incentives, you've invested a lot of money in your quarterback position.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, as Trey mentioned, and you've already paid Amari Cooper $100 million, you just mentioned
it's not like
they've already
got a lot of extra
Ezekiel.
Money sitting around.
Right. They've already paid Elliott. So, yeah. They got a lot of money wrapped up. What is the deal with, like, what is the Dak Prescott? What's going on? We're not there. We don't cover. But what is the – why don't we have everything done? Why are we still having a Dak Prescott conversation? What am I missing?
I don't know. That's one thing that I've tried to figure out, too, of why they just haven't gotten this done. I thought Trey laid it out the best of they've kind of gone backwards in doing all this, that generally you start with the quarterback, but they've filled every other position before getting to Dak. And like I said, you know, and I've read some articles that say that you know, Dalton is the protection if they have to start training camp without Dak. I feel like before the season starts, they get this done, and it could be similar to the Derrick Henry situation of they knew they had to go down the checklist and get through the draft and free agency before they got to Dak because they had tagged him. But it is, I am curious of that, of why.
Is he worth that money?
I think by default.
No, that's not a good enough answer. Like I'm asking you, is he what is he? Is he great? Is he above average? Is he good? What is he?
He's above average.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's in between. Is there such a thing as in between good and great? Because that's kind of where I think he is.
Yeah,
like I think he's better than good.
Andy Dalton was somewhere in that range, right? But do you think Prescott? They had a pretty potent offense last year.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at, though, Willie. And that's the example I was going to use. So what is the gap between – that's literally where I was going. Where's the gap between Prescott and Dalton on that roster? What's the gap?
Well, we're going to find out because that's what Jerry Jones now has the luxury of doing.
Is it like $27 million? actually, it's more than that. Is it like – what is – I mean, is it $30
million? $33 million, I believe, is the
– Okay, so it's a $30 million gap?
It's going to be it could turn into a heck of a firestorm down there. Of course, that's what Dallas is all about. That's what makes the Cowboys fun, even though it hasn't equated to a lot of winning. I think that was pointed out as one of the during the draft was since I can't remember what year it was. If you take a certain year, the Bengals actually have more 10-win seasons than the Cowboys, and neither team has gotten to a conference championship game. Of course, I don't think the Bengals have won a single playoff game, but it's not like the Cowboys have done a whole lot. They had a couple of really close misses in divisional playoff games, a couple of really tough losses to the Packers. You know, the Dez Bryant catch that wasn't, the Jared Cook catch, the miracle catch down the field a couple years ago. But these crazy things that the Cowboys do have not, even though they become the talk, right, and they always have this amazing fan base and controversy and stuff, but unlike the early 90s, it has not equated to big winning seasons.
Yeah, and looking, trying to do the comparison between Prescott and Dalton and their numbers, obviously Dalton's played longer, but completion percentage for Dak is a little bit better than Andy, but not by much. 65.8, so almost 66% completion percentage compared to 62 for Dalton. Dalton has more his interception to touchdown ratio is a little higher, but they're comparable. I mean, they're close. I would give the edge to Dak if you're making me say, you know, okay, who's better of the two? I'm going to go Dak. I think that Dak is somewhere in between good and great. I would put Dalton more. He'd be closer to good, in my opinion, but
you're paying Dak he's going to be one of the highest. What would that number, is that set to make him the highest?
Well, it depends on what happens. I don't know.
Well, the new deal, what they're talking about would make him. Are you willing to make Dak Prescott the highest paid player in the league?
No.
That's
right. Mahomes should probably get that.
Well, but I know, but he will. But we're talking
he's going
about
to get it.
Prescott.
Well, and
for
is
now.
That what Dak is? Is that what is holding this up? Do we think that could be what's holding it up? That Dak and his representatives, they want to see what Mahomes gets, and that's going to be where they try and base things on him. He's not going to get 40. I mean, if they think that, they're stupid. But Mahomes will.
Well, if you listen to enough shows on ESPN, some of these former players, they certainly think he deserves $40 million a year.
Yeah,
I know that's silly. I'm doing that in a little bit of a sarcastic tone because I don't listen to former players getting on national television, their platforms, and saying pay the player whatever he wants. I mean, of course they're going to say that.
So if the latest offer is around 33 or even above 33, let's start with this. Would you pay 33 for Dak?
That's in the ballpark. That's in the ballpark.
I think that's just in the you're probably going to have to, even if you don't want to, range.
You're just going down that path of what so many teams we've talked about. It's what Cincinnati did with it, right? Baltimore, Cincinnati, I'm talking about with Flacco and Dalton. We could start stating the examples where you're like, yeah, you have to because what else are you going to do? Well, but is that the right move?
Right, but these guys are willing to sit out. That's the problem. I mean, I and I'm saying that based on an assumption, but I feel like that if Dak hasn't signed the franchise tender yet, then this is looking like it could be another Ezekiel Elliott situation where he's willing to sit out. Now, is he going to go train in Cabo? I don't know. But, you know, is he willing to sit out and hold out like so many players have?
Is Dak Prescott special?
Special above what everybody thought he was going to be, yes.
Of course, he was a fourth-round pick, but.
I don't know. That's a really good question. I don't think so.
Of course, everybody has a different interpretation of what special means, but he hasn't had the huge postseason. But if you take a look, he was the number one ranked quarterback in efficiency of in Football Outsiders last year, just for example. In the ESPN QBR, he ranked fourth. So special in a lot of ways, yeah. I mean, you look at he's got the fantasy numbers, 30 touchdown passes, only 9 interceptions. I mean, he had really good numbers last year. The problem is they didn't win much.
But that's kind of been the knock with the Cowboys. I mean, you know, was Tony Romo special? If they, I mean, I'm going to say no. I think it was really, really good, but the problem is they get these players that at the time you might view them as special, but then they don't do anything. Now some of that has been Jerry's fault.
You're going to have to pay for those numbers. So those numbers are good, and that's going to cost you. I mean, okay. Because don't
what
you
do
think?
You say,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think he's good. I think he's. I hesitate to say really good because I kind of feel like that's like hovering closer to elite. He's not elite. We all know that. But I don't know what – because you kind of said it. Is there something in between good and elite? That's kind of where I am.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of say that there is because that's where I think I would put him. I just don't
– I mean, he's so very good. You can't deny that.
You're
he's
on the same lines
good?
As I am.
Okay.
He's
I mean,
very good.
Is he though?
I don't know. I'm just – if you put other quarterbacks in that position, you know, in under center on those rosters that he's had, do you feel like they could get the same results or better, or would they be worse?
You know, he's
would
also
Andy Dalton
a guy
the last
that...
4 years, would they be worse with Andy Dalton? I don't know.
No, I think they'd probably.
Well,
be
he's
about
also
the same.
He's got 15 rushing touchdowns in 3 years. He's got that element to his game.
Yep, true.
I think you could say he's improved since his rookie year, where they won a lot of games. Right, he had a little bit of a dip, I guess, his sophomore year, and then he came back strong last year.
Dak's never had a losing season.
A lot of good things.
Last year they were 8-8, but he's never had a losing season. Since he took over the job and has been
right. So we're talking about a guy whose stats would tell you that he's close to elite, but the winning does not quite get you there.
Let me ask it this way.
Right. And he's young. So I think he wants elite money. I think Jerry Jones is probably thinking you got to show me, you know, get me to a Super Bowl and then I'll pay you.
And I think that sometimes, and I'm looking at it this way, we put him on a higher pedestal. He's probably putting himself on a higher pedestal, as are his representatives, because of the team that he plays for. Because when you become the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, There's all this history and America's team and Jerry Jones. And so even though they haven't lived up to that moniker at all, the team hasn't. I mean, since 1996, that's what Trey and I were talking about. I mean, it's been that long since they won a Super Bowl. They're still viewed as they're the Dallas Cowboys. They're the mighty Dallas Cowboys. He's the quarterback of the Cowboys. And so I think that sometimes a player in that position, and you can say the same for Romo, that price goes up a little bit just because of the team they play for. Are we having the same conversation about $33 million or being the highest paid quarterback if he's playing for another team that isn't in the same realm of the mystique that is the Dallas Cowboys? I don't think so.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. They've never been afraid to pay. They've never been afraid to jump in there. Why are we having this conversation?
They've paid. That's the thing. That would have you believe that they would overpay. That's
so why aren't they
paying record
them?
Of the Cowboys.
Why are we still having this conversation?
They're caught up. They've had to pay a lot of money to the other guys.
Okay.
They spent a lot more money than most teams do on Ezekiel Elliott. You know, they made a big investment. They gave up a lot to get Amari Cooper, right? So they've put a lot behind that investment. So I think they're trying to save some bucks here. It's a fascinating thing. So 4 years in the league for Prescott, 21 rushing touchdowns. As Chase said, he's never had a losing season. He's had a 13-3 and a 10-6. In his passing, you know, last year, that's a pretty darn good season, no matter what numbers you want to look at. 4,900 passing yards, 30 touchdowns. Yeah. As I said, the efficiency numbers from Football Outsiders, right up there in the top four or five, depending on which number you want to look at. But he's right up there with all the best. But it has not equated to big wins in the postseason.
Has also been,
in fact, no wins in the postseason.
Has also had the luxury of one
win in the postseason.
Very good offensive line too.
Yep.
It's not like he's been running for his life. He's had the luxury of very good offensive line.
Yeah, a special running back.
A special running back.
Decent receiver.
And arguably the best offensive line in the league for several of those years.
Yeah. If Jerry is making him prove it, if this is you're gonna play on the franchise tag, I'm not going to pay you until you prove it, then kudos to Jerry for reversing course and not doing what Jerry usually does. Because I would back that completely if that's what he's doing. I just don't know if that's what he's doing.
All right, we'll come back and wrap up the third hour of Darren, Donnick, and Chase. Next, we will talk to Butch Spiridon to kick off the fourth and final hour on this Monday. Looking forward to that, and we'll find out the impact of our city as things are starting to open up a little bit. Maybe not so much in Davidson County. I know the North Rutherford Y here in my backyard is opening back up today. I've got to be honest, guys. I was out a little bit this weekend, and it seemed like a lot of people were ready to get out because it seemed pretty heavy. I was surprised at the number of people that were out and about this weekend. I realized the weather was nice, and I realized everybody's been cooped up for a couple of months. And it was 80 degrees, but it was it's the most people I've seen out since all this started. I'll put it to you that way.
Reports out of Clarksville are the same way.
It was heavy.
Traffic is unreal.
Heavy, heavy traffic again. Sam Ridley Parkway on Friday looked like a normal Friday. I mean, looked like nothing. Nothing had changed. I went in some places, and it was packed. So, you know. Little bit, I'd say 50-50 at best, most places that I went into with the mask. I was kind of hoping the numbers would be higher. I'm okay if we start getting out a little bit more. I wish we could maybe have some new rules and maybe just kind of make that a part of what we do for now. But nonetheless, and some are. Some places are. I think the Costco in Cool Springs has said you can only enter with a mask. And, of course, that is – raised a stink with some members, and it's like, well, if you don't like it, then cancel your membership and go somewhere else.
I was out some this weekend.
It's so silly to complain about that, right? Like, how dare you want me to walk into your place and be safe?
Well, and look, I understand that it's you're having to train yourself. It's a new routine. I actually was about to walk in a store this weekend, and I forgot my mask in the car, and was like, wait, hang on, and I ran back and got it. And because, you know, I don't like wearing it as much as anyone else, but it's what we need to do right now. Still rocking the Batman mask, by the way.
Okay,
no shame.
Nice.
Got to have fun with it. But I went in Publix, I went in the grocery store, and I actually had this idea in my head. I was going to bring this up with you guys, so I'm glad that you did. It was about 50-50. It was about 50-50, no mask and mask. And I was curious of, you know, if you guys had seen any of that. So you kind of answered my question, but
I think 50-50 on my end is being generous. I wanted to see it a little bit more than 50-50, but it definitely wasn't more.
I think would have to say where I've been, it's been a little higher than 50-50. It's a really interesting question, okay, because the only thing I worry about is too much too fast, right? Just because we get the green light to open back up in some areas doesn't mean that the virus is gone, right? I mean, I think most people understand that, but there's some people that I wonder how they interpret that, right? It's open, but you should be wearing a mask. You should be taking extra precautions, right? If we're going to have these things open, let's make sure we're doing everything we can to make sure we're not spreading anything from one person to another. And as I mentioned, in Davidson County, where we're still closed, and we have this power outage on top of everything else, we had an increase of 165 cases in the last 24 hours. So just to show you that, you know, it's still out there, right?
Well, I did to-go on Saturday, and it was much faster. You know why? Because there weren't as many people doing carryout because they were in the restaurant.
Yeah, and I think that I worry about this.
Yeah, I haven't eaten in yet, but there were plenty of people eating in restaurants.
When do you think you will, or have you thought about that?
Yeah, we've tossed it around. We're not there yet.
Because this goes back to a conversation we had either last week or 2 weeks ago. Do you sit at the table with your mask on and just pull it up as you take a bite?
I don't know. I'm just not ready to. Yeah, because the right thing to do is to wear a mask in there. But, you know, that's also like, what do you do, right? When you're eating and drinking, right? You're sitting there, yeah. You're eating and drinking. And so you're just, what do you, just pull, you're just constantly pulling up. And so I didn't do that.
I know how I am. And I know what I'll probably end up doing. And that's why I've decided I'm just going to stay home and do takeout. Because I'll sit there and I'll try and do the pull it up for a few minutes. And then you'll get tired of it and I'll take it off.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. That's a very honest answer. And I probably feel the same way. And that's probably why we haven't been in or even come close to dining in yet. But down here, Smyrna, Murfreesboro, wide open. Everything is, like I said, this weekend it looked like business as usual. People were everywhere.
And now we got killer hornets to worry about, apparently, coming to the States. 2020,
well,
man.
I feel like the carpenter bees in my area are the killer hornets. I mean, they are those things.
They don't sting, though.
I know, but they're just really annoying.
Yeah.
And they chew
they
up
get
your
right
wood.
Up to your ear and buzz.
They're smart, too. You notice that? They're smart. They know how to get out of the way. Yeah. But they're annoying. They chew up your wood, and so yeah, I just feel like they're everywhere. But they don't sting.
No, I've always heard that. Now I've never tested the theory.
Yeah, I don't want to test it either because they look mean. I mean, they're big and they look mean. But
they look like they'll get you.
Yeah,
and if you ever want to see me squeal like a 4-year-old, you know, just have a wasp or a bee or something fly around me because I'm allergic to wasps, so I just keep my distance, and I just don't like them. I don't like the buzzing stinger, you know, bugs flying around. So I jump out of the way real fast. But, yeah, they look mean, but I've always heard they don't sting.
I've heard that too, but like I said, I'm not putting that to the test.
I'm the same way. I'm just going to take everybody's word for it and leave them alone.
So did you venture – you're in a little bit different – well, I don't know, but you're in Davidson County too. But, Willie, it sounds to me like, you know, you're pretty close to downtown. Sounds like things are still pretty quiet Or is East Nashville starting to – where? What is the status, by the way? I mean, we've had this crazy 3 months or 2.5 months of tornadoes and COVID-19. Where is kind of the rebuild, and where is East Nashville right now as in trying to get back?
I can't give you a whole lot of stuff that's been documented in news side, just my observation going through. I mean, first of all, the county is closed. So Davidson County is closed other than essential business. So we've been trying to do the takeout orders. There's some local restaurants that are open, some that are not. And, of course, East Nashville is kind of famous for not having a lot of chain restaurants. They've got a lot of those small business mom-and-pop
yep.
places. So some are doing pretty well. Some, for whatever reason, aren't open. So that's going on. Then, as you mentioned, the whole rebuilding, the Five Points area, kind of the heart of East Nashville, is still ravaged with damage from the tornado. Slow progress. Some people are still working here and there on the houses and the businesses there. But I would have to say probably not with the gusto and the manpower that you would normally have were it not for the virus. So it's definitely slowed down the recovery process here. So they're doing what they can, I think. But for us, we haven't really changed our mindset. We haven't, for example, driven to an area where we could go to a restaurant or anything. We're just kind of going with the flow here. I got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping that this is the right thing to do all around. I know because some places, I think, just they couldn't wait, and I completely get it. It's like you want to open, right? You're desperate. We got to move forward here. But all I can say is let's be smart about it. When you go, think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just
you know, the virus is still there. Let's try to keep business going, but let's do it smartly.
I saw a guy in Publix that had a Preds mask on. I was like, "That's cool, do that." You know, if you have to wear one, then have fun with it. A friend of my mom's and my mom made a bunch of masks, and so I have the Batman one, and I've had several people laugh and go, "That's awesome, dude! You're wearing a Batman mask." I'm like, if I have to wear one, I might as well have fun with it.
There you go. We will come back, and we will talk with President and CEO of the Nashville Convention and Visitors Bureau and find out what Butch Spiridon has been up to, what has the impact been, and kind of some things moving forward. I mean, there's still some huge events in our city that are set to take place. Is that going to happen? And we'll kind of go down memory lane also. What's been lost in the shuffle is a decade ago was the historic flood, and Butch Spiridon knows all that too well. So we'll get into all that and more with Butch Spiridon next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us. No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.